to be the final, despairing sigh of a vast civilization as oblivion claimed it forever. Far to the west lay the corpse of the city of Nell. The time-gnawed ruins covered most of the horizon. The city had once been as large as Mausolea, but it had been dead for a long time, its people forgotten, its culture lost. It no longer had any meaning except as a symbol of the ultimate supremacy of death. Many of the ruins had crumbled into vagueness, no longer recognizable as anything at all. Here and there, the broken teeth of towers still stood. There was movement, too, the idiot nodding of huge stone structures trapped in magic that would never fade, and would never let them fall, but could not prevent them from losing their form. Spurs 100 feet long rocked back and forth like reeds in a wind. The undeath of architecture. The eternal farewell of a city whose murder, too, was forgotten. Javasak resented the ruins. It was a city that had died before he had a chance to kill it. The extent of the death was a goad to his hate. If he had his will, all death would be at his hands and every skull would be an offering to the skull god. But now, at least, he could impose his will. There was a dark line on the land just ahead of Lost Nell. The army of Neferata awaited the brass scythe. At the sight of the foe, the war horde erupted with a colossal howl. Now the great butchery could begin. Now the fury that had been held back by the Stonepane Mountains could be unleashed. Neferata, in her madness, had laid out her forces in open invitation to disaster. She should have attempted an ambush when she lost Nighthall Keep. She should have been ready to strike at the exit from the pass. Instead, she was waiting on lower lands, and the brass scythe was coming at her on the winds of wrath. Neferata was a fool, and Javasak rode hard to teach her a lesson in blood. Consumed by the frenzy of the ride to battle, Javasak was midway down the slopes towards the foe before he noticed that the Neferatian forces had not yet begun their countercharge. They were motionless, waiting, expectant. And now, with all his warriors roaring with him, with the brass scythe running at full speed to sweep all before it in an ocean of blood, doubt struck Javasak's heart. All the warnings about Neferata's cunning, about her deceptions within deceptions, came rushing back to him. Lord Ruhok had been destroyed at the moment his victory seemed a certainty. Javasak was rushing forwards in certainty, yet the legions of the dead were not behaving as if they believed him to be a threat. You were sent here alone. Graunos was holding back all the other warhordes. He had committed only the brass scythe. Unbidden, unwelcome, the thought rose that what he had believed to be an honour might instead have been a sacrifice. Javasak shouted even louder, seeking to cast doubt aside with the force of anger. The brass scythe responded. The bloodbound of Khorne shook the earth with the thunder of their voices and the pounding of their feet. Yet even through this clamour, Javasak heard a deep boom from somewhere to the rear. It was followed by a long rumble that built and built, that sounded like the death cry of a mountain. The ground shook and kept shaking, and then it was heaving so wildly that it almost threw Javasak off Daurax's back. The juggernaut stumbled, its momentum falling away as it struggled to keep its footing. The charge of the brass scythe faltered. Then the earth began to split. Chasms opened, splitting apart hills and plains, and the Forgotten rose in shrieking vengeance. Nothing ever truly ends. That which is forgotten waits for its time to come again. Its patience is endless and fatal. Neferata, On the Monstrosity of the Past. Chapter 4. The flames were dying now. Nighthall Keep, smouldered like a fire dwindling in a hearth, the last logs blackened and turning to ash. Captain Shavasta led her blood knights away from the ruin. Its skeleton defenders were destroyed, hundreds of them smashed to splinters. They had fought to the end to save what had been their charge for centuries. They had failed, unprepared for a betrayal of this magnitude. Shavasta looked back at the rubble once more before she reached the bend in the cliff. Most of the wall had fallen into the depths of the pass. Smoke billowed from the concavity in the mountain face. Where fire still guttered, Shavasta could just make out some of the remaining floors. Though the fortress had fallen, even its corpse showed the art of its makers. Her heart twisted. She hated that it had been necessary to smash so fine a defense. She rounded the bend. Now at least the sight of the keep would stop opening new wounds. A party of nobles waited a short distance along the ledge. The Blood Knights had left them behind during the attack. Neferata had given Shavasta permission to extend this small mercy. They were the elders of House Valnacht. Shavasta stopped a few steps away from Kero, the ancient lord of the family.
"It is done, then,"
he said.
"It is, father."
Kero nodded. Though his eyes were lidded, their pain was clear. It was the Valnacts who had constructed the fortress an age ago.
"I grieve that this should be Nighthall Keep's fate,"
he said.
"I grieve too. We will rebuild, father. We will make it even more formidable than before. And our task is not yet done. This will be a day of triumph for Neferatia."
"Yes,"
Kero said slowly, his shriveled reptilian features disguising the immense power he held.
"Then let us realize this truth and be glad. When we built the keep, we were but setting a trap. Today we spring it."
Shavasta bowed and stepped back to stand with the rest of the Blood Knights. What was to come now was the task of the elders. Shavasta was of the clan of Valnacht, but she was not among those who had been present for the construction of Nighthall Keep. She did not feel the very roots of the fortress, and she did not have the power to make the coming demand. The vampire nobles faced the direction of the keep. As one, they began to chant the refrain of a great necromantic spell. Their voices formed a deep, resonant chorus. Though they did not shout, the sound reverberated into the mountainside. The ground shivered under Shavasta's feet. Softly at first, then growing louder, came the moan. It rose from the stones of the ruin and from the heart of the mountain. It was the cry of the souls of all who had labored and died for the construction of Nighthall Keep. Even the dead who had defended it and had been physically destroyed were summoned back. Now, what the sacrifices in their thousands had died for was destroyed, and the House of Valnacht called to them one more time to rise up and give all the deaths meaning. The spectres cried out in anger. They came for a final task, one last act, not of defense, not of creation, but of ultimate destruction. All their rage and all their grief united into a single blow that shattered the mountainside. Shavasta forced herself to not wince as the shaking of the cliff gave way to a sudden burst of deafening cracks, and then a cataclysmic rumble. The entire portion of the mountain where the keep had stood broke away. Tens of millions of tons of granite roared into the pass, blocking it forever. The echoes of the spectral cry lingered on after the thunder of stone had faded. Dust covered the pass like a grey shroud. The elders ceased their chant, and the cry faded, becoming tattered whispers, then silence. Shavasta turned away from the spectacle of the rock slide to begin the march west, back into Neferatia. With the task complete, Kero's jaw was set in grim satisfaction.
"Since this had to be done,"
he said,
"it is good that it is well done. There will be no reinforcements for those slaves of Chaos."
"And no retreat," said Shavasta.
"Rise!" Neferata cried. "Rise and destroy the enemy who dares trespass on this land. Rise and obey me, for I am your queen, and I command it." The earth split, and the earth rose up. Sudden canyons yawned, swallowing the bloodbound. Colossal wedges of rock reared into the sky like the prows of ships, their hulls open to reveal galleries of shrieking nightmares. The city of Nell had died before the coming of Chaos to Shaiish, but for the many centuries it had thrived during the Age of Myth, its dead had been buried outside its walls. The region between the Stonepane Mountains and the ruins of the city was a vast graveyard. The accumulations of dust and earth had concealed layers upon layers of tombs. Neferata called, and the graveyard rose. On Nagadron, she hovered in the air, her forces charging ahead below her. Her army was relatively small compared to the brass scythe. She could not risk pulling too much of her strength away from the other potential crossing points of the stone panes. This weakness had been the final lure to pull Javasak into his heedless charge, and with her great summoning, she turned the weakness into a lie. The effort to call the dead in so vast a legion all at once and to harness them to her will was draining. She could barely move, her arms outstretched, frozen in the effort of maintaining the spell and extending her will over the leagues of the cemetery. With the ground splitting and rising up on either side of her, she was vulnerable to attack. But as her warriors rushed ahead with the great tide of unleashed spirits, the fighting was taking place a short distance ahead of her. She felt detached from the battle itself, an observer gazing dispassionately upon a distant war. The clashing armies were no more than swarms of insects. She controlled the dead as if she were directing the flows of rivers, and she cast the flood upon the brass scythe. As the enemy's charge disintegrated into confusion, her commanders began their advance. They knew her orders. She had to trust to their skill. She could not intervene now without relinquishing control of the spell. Neferata reached deep into the earth with her will, found more of the unquiet dead, and pulled again. Two more ships of earth thrust upwards on either side of her, bracketing her with hives of graves. Skeletons battered open their coffins, with mouldering shrouds hanging from their limbs in rags, clutching the blades, now pitted and rusted, that had been buried with them. They leapt from the risen cemetery and fell upon Javasak's horde. Spirit hosts burst from the hills of tombs in vast ethereal clouds. Vortices of disincorporated anger howled over the battlefield. Clawed hands and shrieking faces formed in the roiling ectoplasm. Tendrils of the glow became blades, and the phantoms plunged their swords through armour, leaving it untouched to strike at the souls of the bloodbound. At Neferata's command, in obedience to every slow, majestic gesture, death rushed over the land. Death swarmed over the warriors of blood and brass. It came for them from all sides, from above and from below. There was no retreat, nowhere to turn. "You wretches worship Chaos. Very well, I will give you disorder and confusion and madness and terror. Terror unto death. For coveting my empire, for taking what is mine, for daring to challenge my supremacy. For all of this, I bring you death." Now the rest of her forces joined the battle. Arvale, the Night Reaper, commanded them. She ruled this province of Neferatia, and it was she, in her thirst, who had finally bled Nell dry and brought about its doom. So merciless and vast a thirst was worthy of respect, and Neferata counted Arvale among the most favoured of her nobles. Arvale directed the battle from her palanquin. She sat hunched on her throne like a vulture. The richness of her robes did not soften her angular, predatory silhouette. Though her hair was piled high on her head, it was so long that it also streamed down her back and sides to spread at her feet with the folds of her dress. She was a grasping, hungry shadow, and she revelled in the great shedding of blood. The cornate warrior's defiance was hollow. No frenzy could save them. The land broke up their hoard, and death swept over them, all-consuming. There was only one possible end to this battle. Neferata smiled, an artist before a perfectly executed canvas. Movement was difficult in the embrace of the corpse, but Vasque was used to it. He accepted the burden and had learned to compensate for the weight, the pain, the dome of the skull always looming in the lower periphery of his vision. But it was never easy. If walking was a chore, climbing was agony. He did not dare stop to catch his breath, though. If he did, exhaustion might claim him. He was halfway up the ruined tower on the eastern edge of Nell. He could not stop until he reached the summit. The mummified torso gripped Vasque like bands of iron. The arms wrapped around him, and its hands, hooked like claws, sank into his back. Even now, so long after the corpse of Castan had seized him, so long after his flesh had closed and scabbed and scarred around the fingers, the pain felt fresh, as if he were just being grabbed, the clawed nails drawing blood and gouging through muscle for the first time. The same was true for his left shoulder, where Castan's teeth were sunk. The skull's lower jaw had fallen away, but the upper went in so deep it was as if the head were a growth emerging from his body. Vasque had screamed for 3 days when Castan seized him. 3 days of thrashing helplessly on the floor of his ancestor's tomb, while the dead thing sank its grip deeper into his body and his soul. At the end of the third day, he had staggered from the crypt, carrying the burden that would be his forever. He had learned to accept the weight. There had been no choice, and his new reality was a complicated one. The withered monstrosity fused to his body transported him too. Castan had carried him here to this day and this place. It was time for Vasque to fulfill the oath that had driven him his entire life, and that had consumed Castan even after death. The day of vengeance had arrived. Vengeance for a crime from another age. Vengeance for the destruction of the House of Helizan, and of the rebellion of hope it had led. From the distance came the thunder of clashing arms and the gale wind howl of warriors. He was hearing the clarion call of vengeance. Vasque reached up and found a handhold. Groaning, he pulled himself up another foot higher. He was more than halfway up what had been the interior of the tower, clawing his way from one broken step to another, one crack in the brickwork to the next. He was ascending the guardian spire of Nell. It had stood 3 times higher than any other structure before the fall of the city. It was still as tall as it had ever been, and the city had shrunk beneath it. The guardian was a needle of stone. Like the rest of the city, it had died along with Nell's inhabitants. The tower was an undead corpse. Its white stone had turned grey and porous, resembling rotting skin. Like some of the other buildings, it moved, reenacting the moment of its demise. Where one tower nodded, forever beginning its fall, the guardian turned. It twisted on its base, agonized in the prelude before collapse. It was frozen in the moment. Though it decayed and crumbled, shed stones and sculptures, though the caryatids of its arched windows had been eroded into shapeless wraiths, and though it was turning into a skeleton, it could not fall. It turned, stone grinding against stone, a blind sentinel fruitlessly casting its blank gaze over the wastes of its domain. Vask was bringing vision back to the Guardian Spire. His would be the first eyes to look out over the expanse of Nell and its land since the city had died. From the top, he would see the battle and direct the long-awaited justice. In the section of the tower that he was climbing, less than a third of the wall was intact. Wind plucked at his robes, trying to shake him loose. If he could only manage a little longer, he would see that the staircase resumed. The spire seemed more or less intact for the rest of the climb. But every movement was a risk. His palms were slick with sweat. As the Guardian turned, it felt as if the stone were trying to squirm away from his grasp. The weight of the mummy pulled down on him. His foot slipped as he reached for another handhold, and he started to fall. He hung on with his left arm, and the jerk almost pulled the limb from its socket. He screamed, his feet scrabbling. They found a bit of ledge, and he steadied himself, cursing.
"Look what you've done!" he screamed at the corpse. "Do you wish us to lose everything? Do you want her to escape? Why do you hinder me?" "Our strength is mine. You are the weak one. You are unworthy of the honour of our task."
Before the crypt, Kasten had been simply the most honoured of ancestors, the son of Mathas Helizan. Neferata had killed Mathas and all who followed him, but his wife, Teyosa, had escaped with the infant Kasten, fleeing through underground tunnels as the family's palace burned. Teyosa had nurtured the ember of rebellion, and Kasten had gone much further, sacrificing everything to prepare for this day. Where Teyosa had kept the rebels united and determined, Kasten had brought them the hope of victory by showing them power. He had sacrificed every vestige of his humanity to become a greater danger to Neferata than his father had ever been. And his ferocious will had continued to reign over the Lytesians and Helizans after his death. Vask had often spoken to Kasten's portraiture on canvas and in stone. Over the years, the conversations had become less one-sided, as Vask imagined more and more vividly Kasten's responses. There had been times when the sense of his ancestor speaking to him, commanding him, had been so real. He had come to himself with his head spinning and the feeling that the ground beneath his feet was as insubstantial as mist. Even so, Vask had always known that he was, in the end, speaking to himself. Or at least, so he had told himself when he broke from the spell of Kasten's glance. Even the portraits commanded obedience. Since the crypt, everything had changed. Kasten, or the wretched thing that had been him, was part of Vask now. And the voice in Vask's head was both familiar and strange. It was the voice he had been hearing for years, yet it was stronger, angrier, and more jagged. It stabbed into his skull when it spoke, shards of glass slashing through his mind. It seemed to come from within his skull, too. In the early days of his capture, he had sometimes wondered if he were imagining the voice. He no longer had doubts. It said things he had never thought. It pushed him to take actions he had never considered. It harangued him, plagued him, and at times did not address him, howling mindlessly. He would join it then, and two splintered souls would scream their anger into the darkness. He was no longer just Vask. There was Kasten in him too. More than Kasten's body had seized him. The spirit of the great hero was in Vask's. It was broken, sharp, maddened. It was strong too, and relentless. Its hatred for Neferata was undying. It had shown Vask what to do, and it had given him the power to do it, though its every command and whim were torments, shredding Vask's self in mind and soul, as surely as Kasten's body was torn. Through hate and agony, they had reached this day. Vask refused to fail now.
"I am not weak,"
he snarled, pulling himself up again. The guardian spire turned, the wind moaned and tugged, and Vask kept climbing.
I am not a burden,
he cried.
You are my burden, but you will not pull me down. We will pull the Mortark down. An end to her deception,
he spat, and drew closer to the stairs.
An end to her lies.
Closer yet.
An end to her!
Caston screamed in his head, and Vask hauled himself onto the steps. He leaned against the wall for a moment, catching his breath. He glanced down at the gap below. As the tower spun, the vista of the broken city whirled past. Vask had climbed very high already. He looked away and resumed his ascent. Moving past the windows, he could almost believe that Nell was rotating around the still point of the tower. He was at the centre of things, and that, he knew, was the truth. He would soon prove this to Neferata. At last, his breath harsh, the weight of the corpse pulling him forwards, the pain in his shoulder and back as hot as red coals, he reached the narrow roof of the spire. It was less than 10 feet across, and the parapets had fallen away. It would be easy to slip and plummet to the distant ground. Vask stood in the centre of the roof, shuffling his feet carefully to keep his stance, and to remain facing east, where the battle waited for him. From the commanding height of the Guardian Spire, he saw the forces of Khorne being savaged by the legions of the dead.
This is a rout,
he said.
We expected nothing else. She shapes and manipulates. She would have the first true battle of the war take place on her terms. This is who she is. This is the danger we have come to destroy.
Despite himself, he was awed by what he saw. The plains and low foothills beyond Nell looked like an ocean in a storm. Huge waves of earth rose, crumbling into the air, and chasms opened up between them. Ectoplasmic lightning and roiling fog swept over the fragmented horde of the Brass Scythe. The shrieks of spectres, the raging cries of berserk warriors, and the crashing of the heaving land rolled towards Vask, smashing against him with the blows of a monstrous tide. Death was supreme over the land, and it was conquering in the name of Neferata.
There she is! There is the monster!
The Mortark of Blood was in a straight line from Vask's position, suspended between two of the upthrust wedges of earth. From this distance, she appeared motionless. The only movement was the sinuous weaving of her dread abyssal's tail. Below her, and slightly to the south, her army surged across a level expanse of the plain, driving into the largest portion of the war horde that was still intact.
She thinks she has won. She doesn't realize she is vulnerable. Our time is now. At long last, our time is now.
Vask stopped shuffling. He let himself turn with the rotation of the tower until he faced east. He looked out over the full vista of dead Nell. The silence of the city was heavy, not easily disturbed even by the clamour of war. The roar from the west crashed against the Guardian Spire. But then the tide of sound ebbed. Stillness had gathered over Nell with the dust of centuries. Ruined while the Age of Myth was in its glory, Nell was ignored by the armies of Chaos who marched past its emptiness. The silence grew until it pressed down on the city like a sarcophagus lid. To look upon Nell was to look upon leagues of crumbled absence. The only change the city had seen since its death was gradual but implacable decay. On this day, though, there was movement through the stillness. The movement was solemn, respectful of the huge sullen meditation of the vast, slowly vanishing sepulchre. Those who walked its streets had no desire to break the silence. They embraced it. They used it. It covered them as it covered the city, concealing their approach. Vask saw them, for they came at his command.
They are mine. This is my design they come to fulfill.
You began this. I complete it.
You are mine as much as they are.
What happens this day is mine!
Vask shrieked. The wind stole his cry, and the silence muffled it. When, commanded by Neferata, Arvale had decreed that the entire region would march to battle at the Stonepane Mountains, there was one noble family that did not answer her call, and that single absence escaped her notice. House Lytessian had the means to disobey Arvale, and had every reason to. Once one of the richest families of Nell, the Lytessians had witnessed Arvale's depredations, and had realized what was coming in time to flee the city before the collapse. They had retreated to the shadow-haunted hills far to the north and carved out a precarious existence there. Hate had kept them strong. There was plenty of hate for Arvale, but the truest, purest hate was for Neferata. It was the Lytessians with whom Teyosa Helizan had sought refuge with her infant son. That one surviving fragment of the Helizans had been enough to alter the Lytessians forever. As Castan had grown in anger and strength, he had made the Lytessians his own. He had been the spider hidden at the centre of the web, a necromancer patiently weaving his revenge, never venturing out of the depths of the clan's manor. Gradually, the family had become an extension of his will. Even after he died, his purpose had shaped every action of the Lytessians. There was much that Castan's will had commanded. There was the creation of a secret army, building upon the family's resources, drawing in the discontented and the betrayed from Nell. There was, crucially, the meticulous crafting of the necromantic work, work that was built upon and strengthened by Castan's successors, which kept the dead of the Lytessians under their control, hidden from Arvale and Neferata. That was the struggle of generations. This day never would have come if Neferata had discovered that the Helizan rebellion lived on. The isolation and remoteness of the Lytessians' land helped. Until Neferata was ready to attempt to reconquer the lands lost to Angaria, the flows of the wars had left the Lytessians alone. Vask had spent his life in a state of twitching impatience, knowing that he must prepare for battle as if the moment of revenge might not dawn for generations yet. He had been faithful to his charge, and then Castan had taken him, and he had known that the time of waiting was nearly done. Castan had turned Vask's gaze to Angaria. Protected by 100 wards of concealment, the fused necromancers had cast spells of summoning, drawing the attention of the demon prince. At last, Graunos had answered. Rage had allied with rage, and House Lytessian began its march. Vask watched his army now. The silent anger moved through the silent streets. There were vampires in the ranks, those who feared or hated Neferata enough to take up arms against her, driven by desperation and hope. The heads of House Lytessian were there, marching in close ranks through the narrow streets, the lines of skeletons reaching back until they disappeared in the shadows of the ruins. But at the head of the ranks, in command of the attack, were mortals. The Helizan rebellion had always been, at its core, an act of glorious refusal by mortals to be ruled by the dead. This was Shaish, and Nagash would claim all who lived in the end. So while the end was not yet here, they would burn brightly and give him nothing. Mathas had still led the uprising after Neferata inducted him into the ranks of the undead, and that was the moment, as Teyosa and then Castan had taught in the years that followed, when tragedy had overtaken the rebellion. While he was a mortal, Mathas had been in possession of his self. Once he had become a vampire, he had only thought this to be true. His every action had been governed by the monster who sat on the throne of the Palace of Seven Vultures. No vampire had been trusted with full knowledge of the rebellion ever since. Those who took up the cause had to accept that they would not rule it.
The living fight for the living.
Vask whispered. The vow had a bitter edge. The weight of Caston's mummy and the pain of its grip mocked him.
What are you? What are you?
I am mortal,
Vask said.
I shall die, yet I still live.
It was a refrain he repeated daily, endlessly.
What are you? What are you?
The question never answered, the taunt never silenced. Vask was very old. So much of what made him mortal had withered and rotted, shriveled like petrified flesh. He had begun to insist, through the refrain, on the reality of his mortality years before his descent into Caston's crypt.
I am mortal. I shall die, yet I still live.
What are you? What are you?
The doubts and the insistence never gave him rest. The cycle gnawed at his heart. It was almost as painful as the corpse's teeth. Shuffling again to stay in place, Vask looked for the sight that would hurt him the most. He did so because it was also the source of his greatest pride. Scarveth Lytesian embodied what Vask had given up for the cause. He was the great commander, the icon of nobility who gathered followers simply by existing. He was what Vask had sacrificed in order to preserve. When Vask looked at Scarveth, he saw the future of the houses. He felt pain because Scarveth was what Vask would never be again, and because of the scars that marred Scarveth's perfection. But in full armor, with his face hidden, he was still perfect, and Vask felt more pride than pain. Vask spotted Scarveth easily, there at the head of his great company of riders. The men and women of the house's horse guard bore their colours proudly. Though the day was a deep grey, the gold and green was resplendent, as if the armour were imbued with its own light. Though the hoofbeats of the chargers were muffled by the city's quiet, the pride of the banners was a shout. It would have been proper for Scarveth to wear the colours of Helizan. He was a descendant of Mathas just as much as he was a son of Lytesian. But none of the Helizan family armour had survived the fall of Mathas. Scarveth wore the colours of his other house with honour. And Vask thought this was well too.
Will you not want Neferata to know whose vengeance has come for her?
Scarveth had asked.
I do,
Vask had answered.
But if she goes to oblivion in ignorance, I will be satisfied.
Vask found it hard to set aside the instincts for secrecy that had been bred for generations into the narrow thread of the Helizans. Even now he felt no hesitation in keeping the name hidden. Scarveth reached the foot of the guardian spire. He drew back on the reins, halting his charger, and looked up, raising his visor. The ground was too far away for Vask to see his face, but he knew the features well. They were very like what his own had been long ago. Scarveth was Vask's legacy, the embodiment of what the two houses had been and would be again. Scarveth was why Vask had opened Caston's tomb. He had sought to prolong his existence and his reign as chief necromancer, in part to spare Scarveth from following his path for as long as possible. Scarveth was a commander of power. He would be a beacon on the battlefield. Dragging him into the necromantic dark would be a loss for the present as well as the future. There was more, too. Vask had given up more than his body. Monstrosity had reached into his spirit as well as his flesh. Scarveth lived to a code of honour that Vask could no longer even pretend to follow. Vask had no wish to steal that from the future either. Vask had a dead thing clinging to his torso, and the cost did not seem great. Vengeance was nigh, and the man who would carry the Lytesians and Helizans to glory was saluting him. Vask raised his arm in answer, and then turned and pointed east. With that gesture, he unleashed his forces against Neferata's. The infantry of skeletons and mortals charged past the guardian spire and through the low ruins of Nell's walls. Though the horse guard had led the advance through the city, Scarveth held back for the moment, as Vask had commanded. The initial attack would already be a surprise. Vask would send Scarveth for the second shock, and the final blow. He turned his attention away from the armed rush. It would have been satisfying to witness the initial impact, the moment when the long-dead hand of Mathas Helizan reached from his tomb to strike back, at last, for what had been done to him and his family. But Vask could not afford to divide his attention. His body, growing used to the tower's movement, fell into a steady shuffling, keeping Vask steady, his torso almost motionless, facing east. All of his energy, all of his focus, all of his skill and all of his power would now be directed at Neferata. She had barely moved while he had been looking upon his army. Her focus was as singular as his, though she was controlling forces far more vast than anything Vask could summon. He didn't have to be as strong as her. All he needed was to strike once, not even fatally, just hard enough. Vask concentrated, staring at the distant queen. He saw nothing except the small, graceful, slow-moving figure. Everything else grayed and fell away at the edges of his vision. He began to speak the words of invocation. He clasped his hands together and held his arms out, rigid, pointing at the Mortark. The energies of death built up in his hands. A nimbus of black and gold and red crackled into being. Vask's arms shook as the power grew. He almost cried out to release the energy.
"Not yet, not yet! Be strong or be defeated. Prove yourself to be my descendant."
Vask's chant sounded strangely in his ears. His voice was doubled. Two necromancers, one living and one dead, were speaking at once. The nimbus widened, and the spell grew more powerful. Trembling, agonized, Vask held back and kept chanting. Neferata heard the outbreak of battle behind her. She did not know what was happening, and she did not know what it meant. She could not turn around quickly without losing her grasp on the waves of spirits. Then whatever had gone wrong rippled forwards. Neferata glanced down and saw confusion in Arvale's ranks. Their march forwards stopped. Some were turning to the rear. Arvale stood up in her throne and looked back and forth as if uncertain where to direct the fight. Eastwards, the large mass of the brass scythe began to rally and press back against the Neferatians. A new force had entered the fray, one Neferata did not know and had not foreseen. Her lips drew back in a gradual snarl of frustration. She would have to deal with this enemy, yet she was held by her own spell. Her work was almost done, but the battle was changing too quickly. Arvale was suddenly caught in a pincer attack. Neferata felt the cruel certainty that a second trap had been sprung, this time on her. Perhaps she could still disarm it. She began a slow turn, sweeping a cloud of ghosts with her, away from the bloodbound they were harrying. She would hurl them against the new foe and give Arvale a chance to regroup. Neferata was midway through the turn when the arcane bolt hit. It was a massive, brutalizing shock. For a few moments, she knew nothing except the lightning of pain. Thought ceased. Her limbs twitched rigid. She had put so much of herself into the necromantic control of the spirits and the raising of the graves that she had no defenses against a bolt of this power. It blasted through her spell, disrupting it, wrenching everything from her grasp. Caught in the burst, Nagadron howled, jerking wildly, held by the waves of explosions of death energy. The force of the bolt hurled Neferata forwards out of her seat on the dread abyssal's back. She bounced against his spine and then fell. She plummeted between the huge upthrusts of the tombs, convulsing in a flashing black cloud of force. And she felt herself drop through the tatters of her spell. The tapestry she had woven, coming apart like a broken web.
Javasak had fought his way to the peak of the risen tomb wedge, to the south of Neferata, when he saw the streak of sorcerer's light strike her from the direction of Nell. The balance of the war had already begun to shift, and the blinding fog of raging frustration lifted from his eyes. Though Javasak's fury blazed on, cold calculation tempered his thoughts. When the land had cracked and heaved, it had separated him from the bulk of his war horde. From this height, he saw that Herkon, the exalted Deathbringer of the Brass Scythes, had command of a great number of the Bloodbound. In the time it took for Neferata to fall to the ground in the narrow gorge between the high galleries of tombs, Javasak hesitated between his choices. Already, Herkon was hurling back the forces of that black vulture of a vampire noble. If Herkon took the day, he might also think to take the hoard from Javasak. But Neferata was down, and the smell of revenge filled his nostrils. Hesitation vanished, burned away by the need to take so great a prize.
"Her skull is mine!"
Javasak roared, and the warriors surrounding him shouted bloody praise to him and to Khorne. They poured down the upthrust, leaping from level to level of tombs. They dropped so fast, their race was really a barely controlled fall. Javasak ignored the jarring impact as he plunged 20 feet at a time, and his boots punched craters into packed earth and cracked stone. Daurax raced at his side, hooves smashing through stone shelves as the juggernaut hurled itself into a nearly vertical run. The slaughter priest Resiak and the blood-secretor Bayam were only a few steps behind, and they led the rampaging gore pilgrims. The sight of Neferata falling had driven the pilgrims to a maddened frenzy of worship. A great enemy waited to be destroyed in the name of Khorne, and they were heedless of personal risk. Some fell, breaking limbs and necks, and some were trampled. The losses were insignificant. The Mortark was injured, and she was alone. Javasak had more than enough followers with him to destroy her.
"Mine!"
Javasak shouted again.
"Her skull is mine!"
More than her skull would be his. The war would be won by his hand. Graunos would elevate him above all other lords. He could not begin to imagine the rewards from Khorne for such a victory. He could not imagine them, but he could taste them. Taste the blood filling his mouth and running down his chin. He had bitten through his tongue after another hard landing, and he exulted in its flow. The brass scythes reached the floor of the canyon. Neferata was only just rising to her feet. She was still alone.
"Blood! For the blood god!"
Javasak screamed. He raised his giant axe of Khorne. The blade screamed too, hungry to destroy the usurper of blood. Nobility is a useful weakness, easily exploited. I have heard it time and again, through age upon age, proclaimed to be a strength. I have yet to see a single instance where this is true. Should the impossible appear, however, I confess without hesitation that it would interest me greatly. Neferata, Ruminations and Satires. Chapter 5. The guardian spire turned, and Vask shuffled, holding himself in place so that he might see the unfolding of the Helizan's revenge. He could barely stand after unleashing the arcane bolt. The spell had taken all his energy. He was a dried husk. He felt as if the next gust of wind would shrivel him to ash. When he breathed, his lungs rattled wetly, all phlegm and loose stones. The weight of Kasten's mummy threatened to pull him over. It was all worth it. He had struck at Neferata, and he had watched her fall. The moment of her plunge was the crowning achievement of his life.
His entire existence had been directed to making that moment real. By his hand, he had ripped her from the sky. By his command, he would now see her finished. The struggle was not over yet. Neferata was not destroyed, but Vask could see the end coming, and if he had had the strength, he would have laughed. Javasak led a flood of cornate warriors to where she had fallen. The cleft between the risen cemeteries had become a cauldron of fighting. Neferata was alone against a Lord of Khorne and his most fanatical followers. It was possible that they would be enough to bring an end to her. Possible, but not certain. He would make certain, and he would have the Helizan line take part in her destruction, right up to the point that there was nothing left of Neferata but dust.
"Go!"
he croaked. The word was a cracked whisper, barely audible to his own ears. He stretched his arm out again, and his command was visible to the Lytesian horse guard below. Buglers sounded the charge, and Scarveth led the thunder across the plain towards the struggle in the canyon. The banners were high, and for the first time since the Age of Myth, the banner of the House Helizan flapped proudly in the wind, racing towards vindication. Vask followed the sight of the horse guard, storming past isolated clashes and driving straight into the canyon.
"It is accomplished,"
he said to Kasten.
"In your father's name, the battle is about to be won.
End her, smash her reign forever. My father reaches out from the grave to claim his victory."
Vask found the energy to shout,
"Mothers, you are avenged!"
The armoured behemoth blazed with the power of his god. Javasak hit at Neferata with axe blows that would have shattered temple pillars. He was fast, too. He was a rock slide, and he was lightning, and there was desperation in his eyes. He had been on the edge of failure before that bolt had brought her down. He knew what failure would cost him if he did not succeed, and if he was to succeed, it had to be now. His desperation was his weak point. If only Neferata could use it. She couldn't. She blocked his attacks with the staff Aken Seth. Each time the weapons clashed, the air flashed deep crimson. Eldritch fire engulfed the arms of the duelists. Javasak had the offensive, and she could not take it from him. She could only react and block. In her right hand, Akhmet Ha, the dagger of jet, screamed in anger, as hungry as she was to plunge the blade past the seams of Javasak's armour and strike him all the way through to his soul. But she could not find the opportunity. Though Javasak roared,
"Her skull is mine! Her skull is mine!"
he did not shun the aid his minions gave him. His slaughter priest swung repeatedly at Neferata's right flank, and the gore pilgrims hurled themselves to their doom in the service of their lord. Neferata slashed with the dagger, killing two more at each stroke, opening throats and stealing the essence of her enemies even faster than their blood could jet from their bodies. Their blows, the few they landed, meant nothing to her, but they kept her busy. The axe of Khorne and the staff of pain slammed against each other again and again, and the storm of their war grew, surging dark red across the canyon floor, engulfing all the combatants in a vortex of bloody fire. It swept the weaker of the bloodbound into the air, burned them, and wrenched their bodies apart, lashing the ground with the rain of their blood. Javasak leaned ever more heavily into his blows, his desperation driving his wrath even higher. His eyes bulged, and the spike driven through his skull glowed red with heat. His skin blackened, smoke rising from the top of his skull. His pain transmuted into rage, and he brought the axe down with such force that when Neferata blocked it, the ground trembled and split beneath their feet. The brass scythe and its lord pressed her harder and harder. She could hold them at bay, but not counter their attacks, And Neferata hissed as she saw where the struggle was going. Trapped here, she could not aid her forces, and if they fell, sooner or later, even more reinforcements would come to Javasak's aid and finally overwhelm her. Her being still rang like a struck bell from the surprise blow of the bolt from Nell, and Javasak was not giving her the chance to gather her forces and unleash her sorcery. She was using all her concentration to block the next strike, to cut down the Gore pilgrims who dared to come at her with their blades, to hold back the slaughter priests' harrying attacks, and to weather the blasts that hit her again and again from the blood Secretus skull icons as he chanted and prayed to the blood god. Some of the attacks were getting through. Blood ran down her face and shoulders. Her armor was scorched, and her wounds burned with the fire of Khorne's wrath. Nagadron could not help her. The bolt had struck him hard, too, and before he could recover, the bloodbound had swarmed him. Though his jaws snapped bodies in half, the sheer mass of the attackers was holding him to the ground.
"You will fall!"
Javasak roared and slammed the axe down.
"I will see you on your knees before me,"
Neferata taunted, blocking the strike, triggering ear-splitting thunderclaps and another blast of eldritch flame. She was trying to goad him into an error. It was the only tactic left to her to try to break the stalemate before it was too late. Then she heard a different thunder, one of hooves. It was the sound of time running out. Javasak heard it too and understood its import. He brayed with furious laughter. Banners flying, horns blaring, the horse guard slammed into the battle. Javasak swept his axe back and paused, waiting for the opportunity this new force would give him. In his contorted face, Neferata saw the certainty that the battle was about to end. Then the lead horseman shouted, and Javasak froze, his eyes widening in astonishment and disbelief.
"For Neferata!"
was the cry.
"For our queen! For Neferata!"
all the mounted warriors echoed. As surprised as Javasak, Neferata lunged forwards to seize his moment of confusion. Javasak reacted quickly, smashing the thrust of her bladed staff aside and backing away. Before she could press her advantage, the slaughter priest charged her flank with a howling scream. She sidestepped and stabbed with the dagger of jet, catching the shaft of the slaughter priest's axe and forcing it up. The zealot kept charging, colliding with her. She held her ground and knocked him back, but then had to whirl to counter a new flurry of blows from the recovered, furious Javasak. The tide of battle began to change once more. A company of the horse guard tore into the Gore pilgrims attacking Nagadron. They trampled the Khorne worshippers into a blood mire and slashed them from the Adivore's back. In moments, the weight had diminished enough for Nagadron to take to the air. Gore pilgrims howled as he shook them free, sending them plummeting down to smash on the ground. With a vengeful roar, he parted his jaws and swooped back down into the midst of the enemy, sweeping them up with his teeth, shredding their bodies and claiming their souls. His black skeleton glowed explosively, blazing with the green of captured spirits. The terrible light burned into the Gore pilgrims to either side of him as he flew, crippling them, doubling them over in agony, leaving them helpless as he cut them down like wheat. Screaming incoherently, Javasak came at Neferata with such fury that rock shattered and smoked beneath his feet. The air burned as the axe came in at her, and she had to counter with both her weapons to arrest the blow. The explosion of the impact was blinding. For a moment, she was surrounded by fire and lightning. The force of Javasak's hit drove her into the ground as far as her ankles, and pain thrashed through her body. Before the glare of the blast faded, and before she could turn from the Lord of Khorne, there was a rush of movement on her right. The slaughter priest was coming at her again, while the Gore pilgrims rushed into the flames from all sides. Neferata leapt backwards, breaking away from Javasak and somersaulting through the air to land a few yards back from the attack. Before she could turn to the slaughter priest, He staggered to a halt, his scream of rage cut short. The leader of the Horse Guard had plunged his sword through the zealot's chest. The slaughter priest's head nodded forwards, staring at its bloodied reflection in the blade. Other warriors rode up beside their leader, decapitating gore pilgrims with blows as savage as they were precise. Together, they bought Neferata the chance she needed. She had the moments to focus on Javasak alone. He charged, maddened, as unstoppable as his juggernaut mount. His desperation was as acute as his wrath. He knew this was his last chance, and he was taking it with the power of a hurricane. Then the cavalry leader jumped from his horse and put himself in the path of the Lord of Khorne.
"For our queen!"
he shouted, and ran forwards, blade extended. Incredulous, Javasak struck the warrior with a sideswipe of his axe. The warrior's armour was as cloth against the blood-forged weapon. The blow cut through his flank and shattered his spine, killing him at once and hurling his body out of Javasak's way. Javasak's attack was brutal and dismissive. It was also his mistake. He was still coming at Neferata, but he had to pull his axe back again. She didn't give him the chance. Setting aside for the moment her own astonishment at the scene she had just witnessed, she rushed at Javasak like a shadow, like the wind, and she drove Akhmet Ha through Javasak's right eye. His skull cracked. His legs kept moving, and he carried her backwards for several years.